Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We first did an interview with Kim Motley some months ago. She has an amazing story. She is the first foreigner who has ever litigated cases in Afghanistan's criminal courts. She spent 5 years there, and her years are the material of a Milwaukee Film Festival film about her, which is going to be airing tonight, Motley's Law. She is a former Mrs. Wisconsin. She is a University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee graduate, a Marquette graduate, and obviously her time in Afghanistan was fraught with some incredibly interesting cases. She learned Sharia law, which also operates in addition to a justice system in Afghanistan. And she has so many stories to tell us, and we'll be meeting her in our studio this time. Last time, I believe she was in Afghanistan. So she'll be with us right here in our studio in just one moment. And it's a story that you will find absolutely riveting. Her life is amazing. But what also is going on this hour, it's a busy hour. It's also our Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. And I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandi. And you know, today it's a case in point that you're always going to hear something interesting when you tune into the Kathleen Dunn Show. Today we're asking you to put a value on the program and everything else that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. Make a gift. WPR.org 888-202-2552.
Kathleen, last hour we heard from 20 people, and 14 of those people were new. We
Excellent.
Had 14 new members
Isn't
from last hour.
Nice.
Yeah, thank you so much. And this hour, Kathleen, I know you love these. We
I
have
do.
A dollar for dollar
I
match.
Like these hours.
Up to $3,000. And this generous, generous match is in memory of Doris Hart from her daughters. And listen to this message. Doris believed knowledge is power. Thanks to Kathleen Dunn and all of WPR for expanding our knowledge.
That's so nice.
Isn't
and it's
nice?
Their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. I always make a big deal about these hours, as you know, Lisa, because it's double the money.
That's
so your
right.
pledge goes, so this is the hour to pledge. And plus, we have a fascinating interview coming up. Double your support for the programs you love. WPR.org 888-202-2552.
If you're thinking that your tax dollars, your federal and state tax dollars already support Wisconsin Public Radio, you're right. They do, and we thank you for that.
But listener support is actually the single biggest piece of our operating budget. You make the difference. You make the quality and the variety of programs on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Because WPR matters to you, make a personal contribution to pay for the programs you listen to at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
There's so many great things about pledging to Wisconsin Public Radio, but one of the best things is that it's so quick and easy. And when you become a sustainer, you simplify it even more. You'll make automatic monthly gifts from your bank account or credit card.
And that support will renew automatically each year, so your membership is always current. Pick an amount that works for you, maybe $10 a month. Become a sustainer right now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
This fall membership drive, we've got a special and useful thank you gift. Ask for the WPR Day Pack when you give $15 a month. Your WPR logo day pack will always come in handy. Just ask our staff.
I could use it for extra stuff that I bring with me to the gym or just extra stuff that I bring with me anywhere I go.
You bring your picnic material in it, a snack, a beverage.
Probably could also carry some groceries home in it, maybe a six-pack of beer.
Check it out for yourself at WPR.org. Then you can move through your day with ease and show your support for Wisconsin Public Radio. It can be yours when you give $15 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Make your donation in support of the programs you count on. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian. We are here to raise the money that keeps this station and this program on the air. Your gift might be $5 a month, $100 a month. We appreciate and we also count on your gift.
At WPR, we have a core group of supporters who continue to give and give generously. They willingly contribute because they depend on this vital, vital resource. Maybe you rely on WPR too. and for whatever reason, you've never given.
We're here to tell you that WPR relies on new members like you to grow and to keep high-quality programs on the air, and today is the day. Show your support, WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and tell us that you want to become a new member. Your gift of $5 or $10 a month, or any amount really that's right for you, is all it takes.
You've heard a lot of election coverage on the Kathleen Dunn Show just moments ago, in fact. So moments ago and in the last year. And there's so much more to come before you vote on November 8th. This extensive coverage costs a lot of money for reporters in the field, equipment, travel, all so you can cast your ballot as an informed citizen.
Your contribution pays for subscription costs to news programs. It provides the resources WPR needs to bring you access to the campaigns. It pays our salaries, and we're not rolling in the dough. Support your source for election news at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And remember, we have a dollar-for-dollar match.
Remember that.
Yeah, for
That's
this good. Hour, it's from the Daughters of Doris Hart in memory of their mom. So this is how it works. Your gift of $50 turns into $100. $100 turns into $200 and so on. So take advantage of this match. Double your support of WPR programs right now when you give. WPR.org 888-202-2552.
You've made a habit of listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Make a habit of donating. It's a good habit, a habit you can be mighty proud of. Get started today at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
A dollar-for-dollar match is still in effect. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR will go twice as far.
Yeah, and thank you so much. And again, it's, you know, $5 you give, it's really
right.
$10.
Mm-hmm.
You got the story.
Yeah.
It's a good story. It doesn't happen all the time, so this is the hour for you to donate. We have a fascinating story to hear. Actually, it's an update on a story because our guest this hour was with us a little while ago. Scotty discovered her story. Kim Motley is with our guest, and tonight her story in Afghanistan and also in Milwaukee and in North Carolina is being featured by the Milwaukee Film Festival. The film is Motley's Law, and it follows Kim Motley, who is the first foreigner who has ever litigated cases in Afghanistan's criminal courts. She is very honest in the film and says she went to Afghanistan because it was a family financial decision. She was there to make money, and she wound up doing some incredible work, a great deal of human rights work, and she learned Sharia law. She studied the Quran when she was there to work the justice system in Afghanistan. Also, there was a lot of violence going on around her, and it was a difficult assignment. It was an assignment that would have made most of us pretty darn scared, but she's cool about it all. She attended Whitefish Bay High School. She received her law degree from Marquette in 2003. She earned a bachelor's and master's at UWM. She was crowned Mrs. Wisconsin in 2004 and practiced law in Afghanistan starting in 2008. We'll find out where she is now, and we're just delighted to have her in the studio. We talked to her some while back. Kim, hello. Thank you. It's so nice to see you.
Yeah, thank you for having
me. Yeah, nice to see you safe and here in Milwaukee. It's all good. And to be the subject of a film, it's really, I really saw what you were operating under. We last talked and I had a sense of what you went through, but goodness gracious, what was around you was something. And what you had to do to maneuver this system was also something, wasn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, I still work in Afghanistan. So
do you? You
I
still
do.
Are there?
Oh, yes.
Ah.
You know, it's an interesting place. The rule of law and its legal system is a work in progress, but it's very different from practicing in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. Well, the last part of the film had me believe that maybe you weren't going to be there anymore because mm-hmm. you went to a hotel to get an internet service and to get a warm shower, you know, to get cleaned up, and horror took place right in that very hotel.
That's correct. I mean, the hotel was attacked by several men. I was staying on the second floor, and there were, you know, they just basically shot through the hotel. Unfortunately, a lot of people were killed as a result, and we were sort of locked in for about 6 hours in the hotel, just hiding, mm-hmm. basically.
And at that point, you were talking to your husband. It's an amazing conversation because you're trying to be very calm about it. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you weren't crying or anything to him. You were just trying to be cool about it so he wouldn't get upset. But he saw the news and he knew that you'd been through a whole lot.
Right, that's true. But, you know, it's an expected consequence. I mean, Afghanistan, make no mistake about it, is a war zone. And, it's nothing that I'm not unfamiliar with, unfortunately. But, you know, it is what it is, and it's part of the job to work in such a volatile environment.
Mm-hmm. You really underwent a transformation. You're very honest in the film, saying that you went there as a family financial system decision. You went there to make money. And what developed over the course of some years is a lot of human rights law as well, and a deep understanding of what's going on in the country.
Right. I mean, I feel very fortunate because I felt like I went to Afghanistan to help capacity build, is the word we like to use, the legal system, and sort of talk to a lot of the lawyers and teach them how to practice law in Afghanistan. And I found that when I went there in 2008, even now, Afghanistan really capacity built me as personally as well as professionally. So what has started in Afghanistan has really exploded to the point that I have clients that I represent all over the world, and about 30 to 40% of my work is pro bono cases. I still have my law practice, but I'm completely self-funded, and I always tell people I'm an investor in human rights through my investment in representing people, especially in Afghanistan, for human rights issues, which is vitally important, not just for us as human beings, but also for economic development, for promotion of rule of law, for promotion of civilized societies, and creating environments where people can live very peacefully and protected by the law.
Mm-hmm. What was interesting, and tell me if this is true, from seeing the film and from talking to you, it would seem to me as though you knew the law better than a lot of the people who were supposed to know the law. You knew Sharia law. You were quoting parts of the Quran to people who are in charge of a justice system, saying, listen, this isn't what the Quran says about this. And you were able to get cases dismissed from your understanding of religion, really.
Correct. I mean, I feel like, you know, it is the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan. So Islamic law is very important to legal practice. And frankly, if you're not prepared to understand Islamic law and want to practice in Afghanistan, don't practice in Afghanistan. So, learning Sharia law, learning about the Holy Quran was vitally important to my legal practice. I'm always learning and whatnot, but you're correct. There's a lot of people in Afghanistan that are unfamiliar with the Holy Quran, that are unfamiliar with Sharia law. It is a country where over 70% of the population is illiterate.
Really?
Yes. So a lot of how they learn about Islamic law or Sharia law is because that's what they're being told. It's not what they're reading themselves.
Oh, interesting.
And so, you know, I'm fortunate enough where I can read and write, and so that is obviously a large part of my legal research and representation of practicing law.
Mm. Tell me, and I forget what this is called, where you're sitting in the middle of a circle and you're a leader. It's not in a courtroom. It looks like it's out in the middle of a desert somewhere, and you're sort of the head negotiator. It was a case
of a jerga.
What's it called?
A jerga.
A jerga.
Yes.
And it's somebody who's been accused of theft? Is that what it was?
Well, no. That particular case was where a man owed $2,500 to his neighbor. His neighbor wanted to collect the debt, but the father didn't have the money. And so the two men agreed to have a jerga. A jerga is sort of an informal legal process where you invite, you know, the two parties that are affected, you invite religious leaders, you invite the village elders, and you discuss how to handle a situation. And so from the very first jerga, how they decided the best way to satisfy the $2,500 debt would be if the father gave his 6-year-old daughter to the neighbor's 21-year-old son to marry. So that was how that debt was going to be satisfied. And so several people reached out to me, donors in particular, that wanted to pay the money. And I said, that's not how you fix this. How this needs to be fixed is that there needs to be a second jerga, like an appellate jerga. And in order to have an appellate jerga, you need to have, you know, all the men agree that they want this, the elders, the religious leaders, the neighbor's son, and the father. And if they want to have the second jerga, if I'm going to be a part of it, they need to agree that I'm the one that's presiding over it. And so they did agree. We had the second jerga. The debt was satisfied. The engagement was called off. The girl was sent back home, and now she's in school. You know, and that was part of the conditions of the jerk. That's part of what negotiated. So that's what that was about.
Yeah. You know, what you just said, doesn't it give you pause to say, did I really do this? I mean, your reality is just incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah. I just do, you know, and it's, I really love my job. I really love my clients. I really love being a lawyer and being able to impact people's lives and, frankly, create very good precedents along the way, which I think is extremely important.
Mm-hmm. Your daughter asks you at one point when you're coming back for a Halloween trip, it looks like in North Carolina, if you like to save people. And that gave you pause as well. You said, yeah, I do.
Yes.
I do.
Yeah.
And it's obvious you do. You're also one tough woman over there. I mean, you can maneuver your way past prison guards and hold your own with just about anybody.
I try to. I mean, it's about representing my clients, and that's what I'm there for. I'm not there to really waste time. You know, I'm there to do my job, to do it as well as I can. And, you know, if I have the right to see my client and they're denying me that access, I really don't have patience for being told no. And I make, mm-hmm. I try to do my best to make sure that it happens, mm-hmm. Because I know the law is on my side. And that's very important.
Let's go back to the JRGA for a moment. What's striking is that we have seen how hard it is for girls to get education in Afghanistan. We know they've been discriminated against so much. And you've also defended some people who have left their husbands. We'll talk about that in a moment. But here you are, a woman, and you're a woman from another country who's at the head of a JRGA. Wasn't it hard to get yourself in that circle? You're a woman, for heaven's sake.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't.
Actually not bad. I mean, it's just, you know, I find that I love going to different countries. I love talking to people. I love listening to people. And obviously, for me to be in that situation took a lot of conversations. But it was, I don't know, it just works for me, you know, and it just worked. And you know, one thing that was really cool is I remember New Year's, you know, the father of the daughter called me up just to see how I was doing and to say thank you. And I think that's great. That's huge. You know, it's a testament to what the relationships I try to build. Mm-hmm. Because even though we had that JRGA, my relationship with the daughter doesn't end. My relationship with the family doesn't mm-hmm. end. That continues on. And so from the outside looking in, I can understand why that looks like that would be difficult. But maybe I don't know. I've been there for a while. So it's just sort of, I've been fortunate enough where I know when I need to get X done, I'm going to do my best to make sure that X gets done. And then I don't really think about the process.
The other thing that you can't really escape are the bombs going off, and they're going off in front of the embassy, and they're going off at a hotel where you were staying. There are hand grenades being thrown at your apartment that scare the people who are working with you. Has the violence increased over the number of years you've been there? And that would be really unnerving, I think, for most people to have to maneuver that kind of violence. Where do you put your mind? Do you just have to not think about it's happening, or are you very aware of the potential of violence?
Right. Well, I mean, unfortunately, it's gotten worse in Afghanistan. Unfortunately, I think foreigners have been targeted a lot more since the troop withdrawal from whatever country people may be. It's not something, I work better on anger than I do fear, so it's not something that I focus on in terms of the violence that's happening, what's happening, X, Y, and Z. I really focus on my job, but I try to take calculated risks with different things. You know, it's just one of those things that I've just gotten used to. There's, unfortunately, millions of people that live in, you know, war-torn countries, unfortunately, and this is their normal, you know, and to a certain extent, it's my normal when I'm in Afghanistan. But I do try to be smart with how I work and travel. Part of the reason why I live by myself is because, you know, I can decide where I need to go whenever I need to go. People don't know my schedule because it's not for them to know. And that's also smart for me from a security standpoint mm-hmm. to do that.
But people have threatened you?
People have tried to threaten me. I mean, you can be threatened if you allow yourself to be threatened, but I don't really, I mean, yeah, I suppose.
What's terribly ironic is the film also shows you getting a phone call from the States and your husband has come to Milwaukee for a high school reunion and talk about violence in Afghanistan that happened to him in Milwaukee.
Yes, I don't know what's going on in Milwaukee. And I actually just wrote an op-ed when that happened of, is Milwaukee violence worse than Afghanistan? Mm-hmm. And I don't get what's going on in Milwaukee. I don't understand why it's so violent here. Milwaukee, it doesn't have to be like this. I think it's very clear that we know what the problems are. It's very clear that the educational system isn't where it needs to be. It's very clear that it's a very racially segregated city. We need to start addressing these problems in a substantive way. And I say we because even though I don't live in Milwaukee anymore, Milwaukee is still my home and I'm still willing to help, as is my husband. It's not our physical home right now, but we still come here quite often and willing to help. So, you know, it makes me angry, the violence that goes on here, because we are educated generally. In Afghanistan, it's a little bit different. They're not very educated, you know, and it is really about survival of the fittest. It's not like that here. It doesn't have to be like that. Mm-hmm. So I really wish that people would be more about actions and results orientated in fixing the problems in Milwaukee instead of complaining about it, because that's all I hear is complaints about what's going on here. But I don't see a whole lot of solutions. I don't see a whole lot of action, and that needs to change.
What kind of solutions do you see? What needs to happen?
What needs to happen? Well, first of all, I think there needs to be more programming within the criminal justice system for people that are locked up. I mean, I think definitely we know that, you know, over 90% of the people that get locked up will come out at some point. Mm-hmm. So the society of Wisconsin and Milwaukee needs to decide what kind of people do they want to come out of jail and out of prison. And in a city where 50% of black males are locked up, do you want a more skilled person to come out? Do you want a more educated person to come out? Or do you want to not give them programming and have a more pissed off person to come out? And that's what we're seeing. I think there needs to be more strictness on gun laws in Milwaukee and, frankly, in the U.S. I think that's really important. I think education needs to stress nonviolence in the schools, you know, like as classes. You know, I think we need to incorporate that as part of the curriculum, how to problem solve situations, how to use our words, things like that, that I think are easy to do. I think there needs to be not of this divide between the police and the black community in Milwaukee, and there needs to be more police training on a yearly basis for cultural sensitivity, for gender sensitivity, for whatever, to get them to understand the communities that they're in, as opposed to an us versus them mentality. Because I remember growing up here, you know, I remember when it was great getting the baseball cards from the police. That was wonderful. I wasn't scared of police. But then I really remember when that changed and you couldn't go to the police anymore for the baseball cards. And it really did feel like they're there to punish as opposed to protect the community that I lived in, which was on the north side of Milwaukee. And so I think those are things that we can do as a base, as a starter. Frankly, incorporating nonviolence in the class, that doesn't cost any money. That's just time. That's just choosing to take the time to incorporate those classes. So those are some basic things I think that should be done here.
And we'll ask you about Afghanistan next. What should we do right in Afghanistan? You've got an incredible perspective on all of it. The Milwaukee Film Festival is tonight featuring a documentary that follows Kim Motley in Afghanistan for a couple of years, actually. She has a remarkable resume. She's the first foreigner who's ever litigated cases in Afghanistan's criminal courts. She has her own practice. She focuses on criminal, commercial, human rights, employment matters, and she is from Milwaukee. North side of Milwaukee, you heard her say she grew up. She is a former Mrs. Wisconsin, and she went to UWM and also to Marquette for law school. So we'll take phone calls for her as we carry on here. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 to you, and we'll continue with Kim in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're in our fall membership drive. We have a busy hour. Your support really is the foundation of all of our budget. It's what makes Wisconsin Public Radio your go-to place for great programs. Where else are you going to hear this remarkable story with so many dimensions? Her life has so many dimensions. And we'll get back to Kim in just a moment. First, Lisa Nalbandian is with me to encourage you to go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your gift in support of the programs you count on. And this is the hour to do it, Lisa, right?
It is. We have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $3,000. It's in effect right now. This generous, generous match is in memory of Doris Hart from her daughters. And Doris believed knowledge is power. And she thanks you, Kathleen Dunn, and all of WPR for expanding our knowledge. And the Daughters of Doris Hart does this because they want to inspire you to support Wisconsin Public Radio right now. So double the impact of your pledge. Do it in memory of Doris Hart. Do it right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Yeah, thank you, Doris Hart's family. And do it because of the kinds of programs that you hear and the great production work that goes into this show. Scotty and KP are so good at what they do, and they're devoted and curious and interesting people. And so Scotty found this story of Kim, and I'm so glad he did some time ago. And now there's a film about her because her story stays with you for a long period of time. You listen to this program partially for day of kinds of response to political events, etc., but also because you get to meet people like Kim, and we find interesting things that you didn't know about, and they're important, and they're good to know about.
And that's completely, completely true. And we can't do any of this at all without your support, and without your support right now. Make your contribution at this very moment. Go to WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And if listening to WPR is worth $4 a day to you, become a member of our 9XM Leadership Circle. They're listeners who contribute $1,200 or more a year to support WPR programs. That works out to be less than $4 a day.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah. If you find you've been getting a little more value from Wisconsin Public Radio in the past year, consider a contribution that puts you in this 9XM Leadership Circle, 9XM being named for our first radio station. Make your gift right now at WPR.org. 888-202-2552.
Which we should say went on the air in 1917.
That's
right.
We're
100 years old next year. It's amazing. We've been around a long time, and we're committed to quality. It's possible thanks to you, because listener donations make up the single largest piece of our budget.
That's right. So your contribution makes this program right now possible, plus all the other programs on Wisconsin Public Radio. You're part of the quality you hear every day at WPR when you donate at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
This fall membership drive, we've got a special and useful thank you gift. Ask for the WPR Day Pack when you give $15 a month. Your WPR logo day pack will always come in handy. Just ask our staff.
I could use it for extra stuff that I bring with me to the gym, or just extra stuff that I bring with me anywhere I go.
You bring your picnic material in it, a snack, a beverage.
Probably could also carry some groceries home in it, maybe a six-pack of beer.
Check it out for yourself at WPR.org. Then you can move through your day with ease and show your support for Wisconsin Public Radio. It can be yours when you give $15 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On Wisconsin Public Radio, you get programs that inform and inspire you, programs that entertain and engage you any time you want. And what makes it all possible? You. You make it all possible. People who contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio make it all happen. At Wisconsin Public Radio, your membership right now makes such a difference. Become a member with your pledge of $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount sounds good to you, at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And please remember, the dollar-for-dollar match, in effect, it's a good thing. Now's the hour to pledge. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you.
And the number again is 888-202-2552. We're talking this hour of the program with Kim Motley. Her story will be featured tonight in the film Motley's Law. It airs screens tonight at 6:30 at the Oriental Theater. It's part of the Milwaukee Film Festival. And we wanted to play a little clip of how dangerous life can be in Afghanistan. Kim talked about this earlier this hour, but you'll first hear a news anchor announcing a terrorist attack at the Serena Hotel in Kabul. It left several people dead, and it just so happened that Kim was staying there. She thought it would be safer on the night of the attack, and here is what she, how she responded and what she was telling her husband, Claude.
Security in Kabul, Afghanistan, has stepped up this morning after a deadly shooting at a luxury hotel. Nine people, including four foreigners, were killed Thursday. It happened inside the restaurant at the Serena Hotel. The assault lasted some 3 hours. The four Taliban gunmen were killed by security forces.
I knew I wanted to be at the Serena at least for 3 days, as opposed to my office, because the Serena has electricity, has hot water, has security, three things that at that point in time, my place did not have. It's just blood by the fountain, blood where I just walked. It's just blood everywhere, pools of blood. I'm past the line in Afghanistan all the time with my work, and just not even just my work, just personally, you know. So I felt like, okay, maybe I shouldn't have been so lackadaisical with things, you know, with security and whatnot. Well, nothing's worth it. I mean, if I'm sitting here, no, it's not worth it to die anywhere. You know what I mean? When you have kids, no, no, it's not worth it. Then I called Claude, and he was like, what's wrong? And I said, well, you know, I was at the Serena, there was a attack, but don't trip, you know, I'm fine. He was like, all right, I'm about to go pick up Diva. And so then I was like, okay. And I said, I'll call you back in a little bit. And then I started getting dressed, and he called me back 5 minutes later. And he was like, there's a big thing at the Serena, you know, because I had downplayed it. And then I was like, no, but it's fine now. You know what I mean? It's all cool now, you know. And I said, and then he was like, well, maybe, you know, maybe we need to rethink some things. I said, yeah, maybe we do.
You have, that's such a dramatic part of the film. What do you think of the film? I haven't asked you that on the air.
I mean, it definitely shows me as I am.
That's yes, it does. It does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard for me to judge because
it's
weird to watch myself. Yeah.
I'll bet. Yeah. You and some pretty dramatic moments in your life.
Yeah.
And dealing with this whole system. Tell me more about this. You said something, Idris, a lot of things that are intriguing, but you talk about humans acting inhumane, mm-hmm. Which is true, you know, in Milwaukee and true in Afghanistan, people being disappointing to you. Did you see people acting inhumane? Do you see people acting inhumane all the time in Afghanistan, or do you see acts of great goodness and courage, too?
I mean, I definitely see both. I think the way that women are treated, a lot of women, not every woman, but the way that a lot of women are treated in Afghanistan is very inhumane. There's a lot of child marriages. There's a lot of forced marriages. There's a lot of domestic violence. I mean, it's a country where over 85% of the women are victims of physical or domestic violence.
85%?
Over 85%. Ooh. And it's not... it's serious. A lot of it's very, very serious domestic violence. You know, like I have a client whose husband, you know, put an axe in her several times and she survived. I mean, and no one seems to care. So it's at a different level. The domestic violence that I have seen in Afghanistan versus what I have seen in the U.S. So that's can be very, very disappointing. You know, to see that mm-hmm. and. You know, but it is what it is.
You at one point talk about, and I'm not, you've been there long enough for it to be fair for me to ask you this question, I think, because you're seeing this all around you. You talk about the, I think it's over $60 billion, and this was a few years ago, that the U.S. has sent to Afghanistan that doesn't seem to have done much good at all. Are a lot of people on the take, do you know, or are there a lot of people who are just pocketing money? That's a heck of a lot of money for us to send to the country.
It definitely is, and I think it's a real mistake to look at it as that's what the Afghan people are taking. There's also a lot of Americans that are taking money. The money's being taken from everybody, unfortunately. And so, you know, even though, which is why I'm very insistent with my practice to not take any government money and to fund myself. And you know, I get private donations and whatnot, but I know where my money has gone in terms of my investment into Afghanistan. And you see, you know, I remember that we've spent millions and millions of dollars into rule of law, but I remember going into court in Afghanistan for the first time, and there was no furniture. So we're sitting on the floors, but yet they've invested supposedly, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars of furnishing that courtroom. You know, so I have seen it firsthand, the lies and the extortion that has happened with our money as U.S. taxpayers in Afghanistan. And it's very shocking and very, very disappointing to see it not being spent the way it's supposed to, because I really do believe that if the money was spent the way it was supposed to, it would be a lot further along, number one, and we would see a lot more progress than what we see. And perhaps Afghanistan right now, if the money was invested where it was supposed to be invested, perhaps they would be in a better position to provide their own security. Mm. But that has not happened, and there's no checks and balances. And frankly, it's shocking that there aren't, you know, more people that are in prison because of it.
Mm-hmm. You ask at one point, I think it's one of the people who's working with you, when do you think we'll be able to have the Afghans take care of their own security? And I believe somebody says maybe 10 years down the road. Mm-hmm. That's a long time. We've been there, what, 13, 14 years, 15 years?
Right. I think the problem is we don't really still understand the environment that we're in. And I think, okay, for instance, when I first went to Afghanistan, there was this police training that was funded by the U.S. Department of State where people were supposed to come in and teach police officers basic skills, investigation, how to detain somebody, you know, basic skills that our police officers know how to do. And so I remember the police officers came in with these big, beautiful binders of information of what they're going to teach people, you know, how to be police officers in Afghanistan. So the first day on the job, what they did is they give them their kit. And their kit is like their clothes, their shoes, which makes sense because you want everyone to feel like they're part of a team. Mm-hmm. But one thing they didn't realize is that for basically that first week, what they would need to teach the Afghan police officers was how to tie their shoes.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, literally, you know, because everyone wears sandals. And so that's, to me, a huge failure of you understanding the environment that you are in. And we cannot necessarily blame the Afghans for not being at that place. It was our responsibility to research that environment, understand where we're at. So I feel like part of my job as a lawyer, working within rule of law, working with representing cases, is trying to teach people how to tie their shoes when it comes to law.
Wow. Are you still the only foreign lawyer in the country, or are there others now?
There are four others, but I'm the only foreign lawyer that goes to court. So I go to criminal and commercial court. The other four, they do like contract work, which I do that too. I mean, it's different. I'm sorry. But yeah, I go to court.
Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, if you'd like to join our conversation. We go to Joan, who I think is still with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Joan.
I am still with you because I called in to make a big donation.
Oh, thanks, Joan.
I love your show. And he said, well, you've got the wrong number. But I was listening to the show, and I listen every day, well, every day I possibly can, from 6 in the morning until you go off at night. And I have probably listened since I was 6 years old in the rural school where we listened every day for music, for art. WHA really goes to all of the edges of Wisconsin. It's what we've always supported. But getting right to your point, I have been a teacher 60 years, and I just want to tell you, Kathleen, of how we really badmouth our kids here in Milwaukee, our black kids. Sunday, I was driving on the far north side. My car stopped in the middle of the intersection, right in the line of traffic. Mm. I called 911. They said police will come, and never saw them. But a young man, you couldn't get out of the car. Cars were zooming past. Mm. I waved. Nobody stopped. All of a sudden, a little red car zipped around, went up, turned around, came behind me. He said, hey, Miss Chris, I was his substitute teacher
Bradley
Tech years ago.
He
recognized me. His girlfriend got out and stopped the traffic. He pushed me across. He waited, tried to get the car going. We called AAA. But I would still probably be stranded in the middle of nowhere. And this was a young black high school graduate who the compassion we underestimate and we don't give enough credit to our young people. And
yeah.
I think if we did, we would not have the crime. If young people walk down the street and they're looked at as if they're criminals, well, you are what you believe you are, and I happen to believe that young people can be wonderful. They just need our support and help.
Right, and you certainly have done that with your teaching. Well, there are a lot of people who are compassionate, and I think Ms. Chris makes a good point. You probably have run into this all over the world, that we discount people, and there are people of goodwill who do remarkable things.
Absolutely, there are. But we have to do better.
Yeah.
Milwaukee has to do better. I mean,
yeah.
there's a lot. I think I'm glad she shared that story. That's great. But we cannot deny the facts and the stats in Milwaukee. It has to be better. It needs to be better. And it could be better. Mm-hmm. It just takes effort and the will to make it better.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Chris, for your call. And don't forget the donation. Don't forget the donation, because we have this pledge drive going on this hour as well. So you have, it's interesting, at the end of the film, I thought you were going to be out of there, but you're staying in Afghanistan. Why? Why don't you just take your practice and leave that country and go to where it might be a little safer for you?
Well, I mean, the thing about it is Afghanistan is very near and dear to my heart, and it's a place that needs rule of law and needs good legal representation. I have many clients that are there that I just simply, they would not have any protection if I was not there. It's just a fact. There's nobody there to protect them. So, you know, even though I'm not there as much as I used to be, I'm still there because it is necessary for me to be there. And you know, like I said, the practice has expanded to where I have clients on every continent that I represent. So I travel all over the world now and do cases. And Afghanistan is a hub, and it will probably continue to be a hub. But, you know, what I'm working on and what I'm trying to do, you know, something, some careers sort of find you, and this is sort of one of those situations. It just feels like this is what I need to be doing from a career standpoint right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really building a global rule of law. And representing people that need to be represented, whether you're poor, rich, black, white, don't matter. People deserve good attorneys.
Yes, they do. And it's kind of sad, the disparity, isn't it, that you go back and forth between one of the more chaotic, although we're chaotic in our own way, but the resources here and the little resources in Afghanistan must be pretty striking to you when you go back and forth as frequently as you do.
I mean, it definitely is. It's very different to practice Afghanistan as opposed to the U.S., and I want people to know I still practice in the U.S., so it's not as though I don't represent people here. I still do, and I still, you know, for me, I'm not an activist, but the way when I represent cases, that's how I express myself. That's how I express my views, is through legal representation. And so, but it is very different. It's very different in Afghanistan, very different in Malaysia, Uganda, wherever. Legal representation, that's what makes it very fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like litigation for me is an art form. It's a creative process, and it's a process that I take very, very seriously wherever I'm at in representing my clients.
I can tell you do. Tell us one more of the stories. There's a young woman, 21 years old, Nadia, I think her name is, in the film, who you represent, whose husband took her to have sex with his friend, and she had to escape, and then she was charged with adultery.
That's correct. I mean, she was charged with adultery for essentially being made to prostitute. You know, it's you know, in Afghanistan, that's considered a criminal offense. And so I was representing her, and she was released from prison, which is good, but she went back to her husband. And that's the reality that, unfortunately, Nadia had, as well as a lot of other men and women in very serious domestic violence situations. You know, all these problems are not confined to Afghanistan. Domestic right. violence is not confined to Afghanistan. Child marriages happens in the U.S. You know, and unfortunately, many people have no choice but to go back to their abusers. And unfortunately, Nadia is one of those people. You know, but my job is to be people's lawyers and not their life coach. And as much as I can try to protect people from their different life choices, it is their choice. You know, Nadia unfortunately went back to her husband. I had other options for her. Those aren't the options she wanted, and so that's what happened.
Yeah. So are you doing some kind of talk back after tonight's screening?
I am. I am. And I actually have, I don't know if it's sold out, but someone said it might be, but I have extra tickets that I just want to give away. So if people can't buy tickets, I don't have many. I'm not a scalper. I'm not going to sell them, you know, but if anyone shows up, they need a ticket, I'm just going to give it to them.
So if you want to just show up outside the Oriental and you run into Kim yeah. and you're there and she'll give you the ticket and she doesn't have many.
Right.
That's wonderful. Well, what a life you have. It's almost as though I see this, and I know you graduated from school in record time. You're living like a double time life. It's pretty remarkable to see. You're just moving along, and you're totally engaged in everything you're doing. It's quite a sight to behold.
Thank you.
Yeah, congratulations, and thank you so much for coming to the studio.
Thank you for having me. It's great to meet you finally.
That's great. Kim Motley, the film is Motley's Law. It screens tonight at 6:30 at the Oriental Theater. It's probably sold out, but they have this rush thing going on, too, in case some people can't come. If you're there a half hour before, isn't that it, Scotty? Then you might be able to get in, so do that. And you'll get a sense of what it's like for Kim to be in Afghanistan, which is quite an experience. She's been there for, when did you go?
2008,
for a long time. So, thank you. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Oh, there is so much going on. This is also Wisconsin Public Radio's fall membership drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and our goal is to keep bringing you all that we can in the best way that we can with all that we've got. Your support will make that happen. So give now. Any amount makes a difference. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Lisa.
I'm happy to report that we have made our dollar match.
Right.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. But we still have more pledges to make hour to make our pledge goal for the hour. So pledge right now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Where else are you going to hear a story like the one you just heard about Kim Motley? It's an incredible story. It is just so unusual and interesting and inspirational. We have a lot of these kinds of hours, so make a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, and then you give. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
It really is that simple. And, you know, you're picking up the phone right now, you're logging onto your computer, and you're like, you know, I've really been enjoying Wisconsin Public Radio more this year. Well, hey, maybe the 9XM Leadership Circle is for you. The 9XM Leadership Circle is a growing group of listeners who contribute $1,200 or more per year to support Wisconsin Public Radio.
Leadership Circle members want to make sure that public radio programming will be here for the next 100 years. If you would like to increase your support to WPR and join the 9XM Leadership Circle, all you got to do is go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This fall membership drive, we've got a special and useful thank you gift. Ask for the WPR Day Pack when you give $15 a month. This backpack is great for your commute, a trip to the library, the grocery store, an outdoor adventure, or wherever. If you're on the go, this bag will be so helpful. It's lightweight, stuffs into a pouch, and is perfect for everyday use. It has gray and black detail featuring the WPR and NPR logos. Check it out at WPR.org. Move through your day with ease and show your support for Wisconsin Public Radio when you give $15 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Pledge at WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Lisa Nalbandian is with me asking for your support of WPR during our fall membership drive. Your gift, $10 a month, $20 a month. We thank you for whatever you can give.
So you've made the decision to support Wisconsin Public Radio. You might be trying to figure out what's the best way to fit this into your budget. A lot of people find being a sustainer is a great answer to that question. You decide on a monthly amount to be charged either to your bank account or credit card, and you set it up to be ongoing.
Being a sustainer is a powerful way of donating. It provides reliable funding for WPR, and it's also convenient and it's affordable for you. Choose a monthly amount, $10, $20, and become a sustainer right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
There's so many reasons why you love Wisconsin Public Radio, and probably one of the big ones is that it's your source for intelligent radio. And there are costs associated with this high-quality radio, and that's where you come in. Your support is so important.
It's very easy to make a pledge. You'll be finished in no time. And your contribution of, say, $5 or $10 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes WPR possible.
And this pledge drive, we're offering a couple new things. We have the WPR Day Pack for $15 a month and the pair of pint glasses for $7 a month. So make your pledge, become a sustainer, grab a day pack or mugs, and go to WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And join people like Hannah. She started listening in 2012 and wanted to donate, but now she finally has a full-time job, and she can give back to the best part of her day. Thank you so much, Hannah. Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, everybody, for all your support. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing the hour and for on-air production, and thanks also to Zeb Gozman for helping out here today, and to KP Whaley, and thanks for your pledges, everybody.